Today on Deep Thoughts, we're going to talk about NSA spying and surveillance in general. Now, if you're a big MKUltra radio fan, you've heard some of this material before, very quickly interlaced into other content, but this is going to be one full segment on the information. So, we know we're spied on now. The United States is a very interesting country in that we are incredibly dedicated and patriotic to the extent we can be easily duped to go fight wars and kill innocent people. But for some odd reason, we can't defend our own Constitution. The Constitution of the United States started with 10 Bill of Rights, these inalienable rights that we have, and then we added amendments to it, which invariably gave away all of our control to Europe. But there's a few that are really important. There's a few that without them you don't have a freedom, the slightest amount of freedom. And one of them is freedom of speech, which sort of still exists. I mean, you can hear me right now and I can say anything I want to say and get myself in trouble. The right to bear arms, which is under complete and utter attack. And for our European friends who don't understand, again, if America loses all of its rights, the world changes. Because we are the world superpower and we have a civilization, a society that is armed just in case someone tries to take away our rights completely and right in our face, right? They boil us slowly, right? This is why they're able to take away our rights while no one's paying attention. But the Fourth Amendment of the United States Constitution is the right to live in your home, any sovereign location that you either rent or own, and you are allowed to operate in that space without being eavesdropped on, without someone listening in on you, unless there is massive cause, massive personal cause based on who you are. Not based on what someone else did in the universe, and then so we got to check everyone's back pockets, but what you might be doing based on a series of behaviors that are profoundly suspicious and threatening. And we all know that 99.9% carry the nine several decimal places of the population on Earth have nothing to do with these nefarious, suspicious behaviors, and yet 100% of the world is surveyed. I don't even care if you live in a tribe and you paint yourself red every day and you don't know what electricity is, there's spy satellites looking at those people, right? So we're going to go over, first, as I always do, the mental fundamentals of what being surveillanced or being watched or being eavesdropped on means, and how you actually don't agree with it. Now, a lot of you who watch this are going to be, of course, we don't agree with it. We're trying to stop it. But for anybody who's bumping into this video and you've never seen a Deep Thoughts before, what we do is we go after the metaphysics behind the mind of all thoughts so that we pierce those veils of catchphrases, of knee-jerk reactions of approval, so we can actually see what's there, and then we move into the actual, this particular one, we're going to move into technology and how it's done, because most people have no idea how you're being spied on. You have no clue. Even if you think you do, if you haven't heard me before, I say stuff that nobody says. Not even Snowden has said the stuff that I say, and I think it's crazy that I'm this guy that's got this information. I didn't have it given to me by some secret source. It's just know-how, okay? So let's take being surveyed. So supposedly some bad guys did some things on September 11th, 2001. And because of those bad guys, and because of all these nebulous threats coming in from the Middle East, which have no sourcing whatsoever, the way to fix the problem is to make sure that free people lose all their freedom. Then we're going to look into everyone's backyard. We're going to listen to every single phone call, read every single email, observe all of your traffic, all of your credit cards, transactions, all your purchasing history, no matter how you do it. And we're going to find bad guys. And supposedly the people that look at your stuff are uber moral people, right? They read the Bible between every single time they steal information out of our back pockets, right? To make sure that the Lord is on their side, right? No, not at all. They're normal human beings who jack off at night, who look at porn, and they're stealing all of your information, which is why we found people's personal information all over the place. The TSA that looks inside your luggage and stuff, the x-rays of naked bodies have already been made it on the internet within freaking hours of that technology being invoked. And they've only gotten probably better at covering their tracks at this point. We keep it real in Deep Thoughts. I hope that's okay. You're tired of getting bullshitted. And I won't do it here. So if I said to you, hey dude, I'm a private security team. I'm paid for by your taxes. So technically speaking, you don't notice my charge to you. And because everyone pools in, you only lose a couple cents every month to my paycheck. And I say, you got a hot wife, dude. I'm going to keep you and your wife really, really safe. But my methodology is unknown to you. But there's one thing I'm going to share with you, and it's I'm going to look in your bedroom window anytime I want. I'm going to physically go up to your bedroom window. I'm going to watch. And I'm going to make sure your wife is very safe in the shower, too. So I'm going to look through that window as well. And I'm just going to look, and I'm going to peep. And I'm going to make sure that no one's coming to get you and that you don't say anything that's wrong. In that stupid, stupid example, you're automatically going, well, of course not. You're inside your mind. The wall of privacy comes in. What you will allow to have happen in your house or outside of your house looking in is not allowed. And there's peeper laws against people looking in your window, okay? But that's for the masses, right? The NSA have, and again, they're built out of wonderful people. I've met plenty of NSA people. This really isn't an individual attack on anyone who has these jobs. If you're listening and you're from the NSA, we'll take it to heart that, you know, we know you're real people. You know, most of you have good intentions, but we know that there's people that have access to the software that you have access to that don't have our happiness in mind. Let's just put it that way. Nobody wants their privacy compromised in this world. No one. Even people that have no privacy wish they had privacy. And so for those of us who are fortunate enough to be standing on the shoulders of giants, the people that have fought for freedom in this world, we have to preserve it. Because if we don't, we're just marginalizing their sacrifice. And luckily, there's been some movement, supposedly, that the NSA is being shut down a little bit. But you can rest assured that they found other legal loopholes and ways to hide it underneath the carpet and tell the masses that the NSA is not reading your emails anymore. And of course they are. Of course they are. I know what a lot of you are thinking as well. You're thinking, well, I have nothing to hide, so I don't mind if they look into all my stuff. Well, there's a couple avenues to that. One, you have no idea how intense they're looking. You might just think they're listening to your phone call. You might just think they're listening while reading an email. They can turn on any camera that is connected to the internet anywhere in the world without you knowing. They can turn on your microphone and listen to what you're saying. Any microphone that's connected to the internet anywhere in the world. And they can read absolutely every piece of data you transmit. And I think a lot of people don't understand how much they transmit. Now, there are good people who obviously don't do anything. I mean, that's you and me, most likely. And then there are an infinitesimal, almost infinitely small group of bad people who are stupid enough to transmit stuff over the internet. So those are only the easy pickings. You know, only morons transmit stuff over the internet, unencrypted, or even on the net at all, if they have a big bad plan set aside. So the people that would be really smart, who could pull off something like 9/11, which 9/11 was not anybody you think it was, but we'll just put that aside for a second, they're not going to operate within the confines of surveillance anyway. Everything's going to be on paper. Everything's going to be in people's brains. Everything's going to be rehearsed. So the NSA will never find the people that are really going to do the bad stuff to us, if they even exist at all, if they have an agenda, they have the money and the time and the resources to invest. But I want you to remember, for the there's going to be a part of you that have seen our show before and you totally get this, and there's going to be a part of you that are going to be horrified at my suggestion here. But there are people in the world who are put in places where they are the patsies. They are the ones that are blamed for other events. I think most people realize that Lee Harvey Oswald did not shoot Kennedy. I think that's common sense for most of you, right? Now, there's all kinds of theories of who actually did it and why. On this show, we categorically say, you know, there was a banking contingency that didn't want his changes. There was an intelligence agency that worked for the banks that didn't want his changes. And there was a vice president who wanted to be president and felt very, very, very betrayed that JFK's dad was able to throw the vote so that the primary switched so he was the candidate to go for president while LBJ was stuck in the vice presidency. This is sort of common knowledge now. But this guy named Lee Harvey Oswald, his story doesn't check out at all, but he was put in place to take the blame for killing Kennedy. Now, back in the day, it was all manual transmission, right? Manual dragging people around, blaming people, and that kind of stuff. But today, with NSA surveillance, again, I'm not saying NSA people do this. I'm saying that people can tap into that database who have plans that are not the NSA's plans and not our plans, right? And they can do special things with the data, such as create an event that is horrific, hire outside people to construct the event and do the event, and then using the internet, they can use filters to find the perfect person that matches all the profile characteristics of the fake event, which people may get killed at these events, people may not get killed at these events, but they can find someone, capture them, and either keep them drugged forever until they get into through the electric chair, or they can kill them on the spot, lay down their body, and dead men tell no tales, right? And when they go look up all the information about that person, their profile matches someone who would do that. The only difference is they never really went crazy. They never really tripped over the wire of mental insanity and actually did it, but they're being blamed for it. And that's one thing that surveillance can allow to happen to innocent people like you. You just might fit a profile of one of these events, and you just might be snatched up, and your whole family name will be destroyed. Your whole career and your whole legacy might be flushed down the toilet because someone could say, oh, he was that guy, you know, he had this thing. He never talked to his family. He spent his credit cards at titty bars. He dyed his hair orange. He was into sex toys or whatever, and it's just he started like that gooey guy that just, it was like, of course he went crazy, and he was on drugs, and he was a gun owner, and he lived in a red state. All things that you can look up on a database really, really easy, almost instantaneously. They can just design a psychological profile that is whoever will match their story that they're constructing, the wag the dog story that they're constructing, and they'll just put people on the ground to look at you and figure out what your daily schedule is, and then work that into their schedule of when they're going to get you and then cause the event and then throw you in the middle. That's an extreme example, but that I believe has already occurred a few times in the last decade. So let's talk about surveillance and how it's done. Because you've had the most amazing misdirection, the old magician's trick of misdirection to make you feel like you're safe. And safe is relative, but I'm just saying that you're free, that you're not being observed, that the Fourth Amendment is not being violated. And it is, every day. But let's rewind to the beginning of this nightmare, because we have 9/11, which I'm not going to run off into that. But due to 9/11, they had this thing called the Patriot Act, which was put in place, which did not have the Fourth Amendment violation embedded in it. And then remember, the Patriot Act was ready. Patriot Act was ready the day that 9/11 happened. So they knew this event was going to occur, and so they had it ready to go. And it was voted on and passed in seconds, right? and only a couple guys read it. I think Ron Paul was one of the only guys that read it, and I think Kucinich or someone else read it. All right. And then there was a maintenance guy in San Francisco who was doing some servicing in a building of AT&T. And he goes in and he finds a gigantic hub of cables. And you can find a photo of this. It was published in the San Francisco Chronicle. It's about between 2001 and 2004, somewhere in there. And he took pictures of it because he was like, this is bullshit. He goes, this right here is not us, and our whole communications backbone is being pushed into, a copy of it's being pushed into this this mysterious backbone, which turned out to be an NSA backbone. And AT&T has always been a government entity, regardless if you know it or not, right? IBM's government, AT&T's government, and your new one is Google. Google's the government as well. And they can just, they can create corporate papers to make sure it doesn't connect to the United States of America or military industrial complex, but don't be a fool, right? We'll do a whole show on Google one of these days. We'll talk about a little bit about them today. But the guy took pictures and it came out that communication companies were eavesdropping on their people, on their customers. And then people did more research, and it came to pass that all internet internet service providers, right, AOL, Time Warner, all these guys were being forced by the government behind the scenes to eavesdrop on their people, to hold log data for a really long time so that these NSA computers could come by and grab all the log data, and then they could delete it, to grab all your phone records and delete it. And they've got all, and the company has whatever it needs for billing. Well, it started getting really hot legally because this is against the law in America, and it is still against the law today. I don't give a shit what sort of like executive orders passed, what have you. The Fourth Amendment has still been in effect. Every company that's ever eavesdropped on you has violated the law, period. They'll tell you they didn't violate the law, but they did, and they do every single day, right? Now, there's something that was invented to cover all their asses because all these CEOs came around and said, look, man, we don't want to go to jail if this thing blows off and your little promise that no one's going to care or no one's going to stand up for their rights. If that doesn't work and they come and stand up for their rights, you know, like several countries have over the last couple centuries, we don't want to go to jail. And so they said, yeah, we know. We're creating this document that they're going to hastily push through. I think it was on a holiday. It was in the Christmas holidays. Most of the representatives don't show up, so it's whoever shows up, there's a majority, boom, you got it. And it's called the Military Commissions Act. The Military Commissions Act is a very interesting document because it almost categorically is the following. Every law that had been broken as a result of intelligence agents responding to 9/11, and again, most of these guys don't know about the inside job or don't believe it. But the torturing, the eavesdropping, the spying of all different kinds in different countries and what have you was all lumped into this document. And then the very bottom paragraph was, it's okay if we do this. We got to do this for national security. And then it carries forward every year, right? But when it sunsets, the next president just takes it on and gets it re-signed up, right? Not the president, but, you know, it gets moved down and voted on and then signed again, right? A lot of us who thought that Obama was fake, we were looking right at the Military Commissions Act, and we said as soon as that thing sunsets in his first term, and if he makes that thing go forward another round, then we know he's still playing for the same guys. And of course, it all went forward, and he added NDAA, and he added a few executive orders that will put anybody in jail to protest in front of the Secret Service if a politician is present. Freedom of speech, right? See you later. All right. So at that point, it became completely legal, technically speaking, in their minds, to eavesdrop on everyone. And it gave the public this bullshit piece of paper that said it was okay for their rights to go away. I'll repeat it. It's still legal to do it, even though they want you to... They'll just tell you, no, it's legal. We got this piece of paper signed. It's cool. And everyone just goes, okay, I didn't realize you had a piece of paper. Fuck. My inalienable rights as a creature of God is just fucking gone, you know?
All right.
So just know it's all bullshit, right? You still have those rights. doesn't mean cops won't get you if you try to stop them, right? It's a mafia up there at the top. That little capstone at the top of the pyramid, which everyone talks about, all the power at the top. Dude, it's Dodge City, it's Deadwood, it's Tombstone. If you're going to go up there, you better be a good shot, you know, and know the game. So let's talk about eavesdropping, specifically through technology, because I think that, again, this is where I'm going to tell you stuff that just I don't hear anyone else saying. You know, Snowden and the Wikipedia guy, Assange or whatever, guy came out the other day and he was like, if I walk outside, I'll get killed by a drone, CIA drone. It's like, well, why don't you give us some secret that fucking means anything? Because everything you said was absolutely lowbrow, low-hanging fruit truth that you get out of any truther organization, right? Julian Assange, right? You take everything he leaked, and InfoWars has leaked more stuff than that, you know? I think our show has leaked more than that, right? It's just stupid. Snowden is just like the care bearer of secret technology and secret information, right? It's nothing special. These guys have done nothing to expose anything. And the idea that senators are saying he should be killed and all this other stuff, it's just to make you to look at them. It's just to make you feel like they actually have something secret. And when they say nothing that's very interesting, okay, you think, well, that's it. That's the whole border of all things bad, right? And it's like, dude, that's nothing. That's a juju bee in this fucking Willy Wonka factory of complete tyranny, right? So there's several levels of surveillance. There's data surveillance, right? You put data into a computer and it's stored on the local hard drive. And then there's that realm, right? Your local hard drive. Then there's cloud. Something from your hard drive gets transmitted to a cloud. Then there's basic transmission between computers over the internet, right? So you're now bouncing off of transmission backbone. And then there's your cell phone. Cell phone is always connected to the cloud because that's what it is, a cellular device, right? I'm going to start at the computer. Your computer runs an operating system, right? Two most popular operating systems on planet Earth are the Windows Microsoft Windows operating system, and the Macintosh OS X operating system. Those are the two most popular that I know of. There's a ton of flavors of Unix now out there too on nerdy computers, right, with almost no software. And I'm sure there's foreign countries with their own little operating systems as well. But the operating system is the first culprit and the first mechanism that harvests your data and gets it ready for surveillance spying. So the big argument in modern day history is that the software companies, you make these operating systems, right? Apple's all in one. They make the hardware and the software, and Microsoft's just a software company, that they somehow liaison with these intelligence agencies and voluntarily give up your data. They have it, they give it up. They have it, they give it up. Well, it's not like that at all. Yes, NSA will petition, the FBI will petition, other organizations will petition, and they will give up individual data on a particular account if they're forced to, right? And Apple has this web page where they say, this is how many times we've given up data and how many times we've had things requested, and we can't tell you about the most secret ones. So you can't know how many times the most secret ones have come through. They can't tell you anything about that. It's illegal. Military Commissions Act, right? Full immunity. All right. They don't necessarily, on average, give your data to anybody, right? They put it in the hard drive in a very organized manner, such that when someone backdoors into your computer through the internet, they walk right past any security that you have because they have the techniques to do it, the backdoors to do it. Backdoors are made in two different ways, right? And they're made. They're made specifically. The most dangerous one for an operating system company to create is called a key, something that is actually physically designated to say, hey, you use this password or passphrase or binary transmission, whatever it is, it will unlock the back door of this operating system on this particular person's computer in their living room, and now you can walk anywhere on that drive you possibly want to. One of those keys was found in Microsoft Windows 98. I remember there was a hacking group in San Francisco that broke this story, went right into the San Francisco Chronicle. And it was that during the installation process, you know, always have those thousand little phrases at the bottom, right, where you could see every file that was being installed. Well, they monitored the name of all those files, and one of them was NSA key. This is before 9/11, right? And they called bullshit on it. They're like, hey, what the hell's that? Well, the way that they handled it was brilliant. This IT head designer of Windows came out in the press and said, that's not an NSA key. It stands for something different. Some weeks later, came out and said, oh yeah, well, it was an NSA key. But all the attention span of the small attention span public that doesn't want to believe that their operating system of choice is nefarious, all right, only hears the first story, never hears the retraction and the correction. You know, Microsoft has an interesting past, and in that the Gates family has been embedded in government at the highest levels forever, for all recorded American history, right? So when their son's operating system, that doesn't have a chance in hell at competing against the Apple Macintosh, all of a sudden becomes the standard, it's not because it was better. In fact, it was a horrible operating system. I programmed on Windows 2.0 and 2.1 and up. Okay, so I've seen it since its inception, man, when it was atrocious. It's because it was harvesting data and getting it ready for anything. There wasn't any internet at the time, but if someone needed to physically go into your office and steal your information, it was ready. And it ran IBM computers. They were sort of building a little empire together, right? So now we have Apple Computer, right? Well, there's an interesting piece of history about Steve Jobs, who I'm a fan of on one level, right? I will never know Steve Jobs' true history, right? He made Next Computer after he resigned out of Apple. He tried to make software and hardware all at the same time, ended up failing with the hardware, then he started making just the operating system. He sold his operating system or licensed to IBM to make OS 2 Warp. That went for a little while and fizzled out as well because Microsoft started kicking ass with, you know, Windows 95. And The way the story goes is that his last client to walk through the doors of Next, it was publicly admitted. I don't mean probably technically the last, you know. But the last big one was the CIA. And then Steve just kind of disappeared off the radar for a few years. So he had this wild client that's got all kinds of tech and all kinds of agendas. And all of a sudden, a couple of years later, Steve pops out and he's now the pseudo-CEO of Apple, with the full intent of resurrecting this company and taking his next operating system, which is the first thing that happened when he came back, was purchased by Apple, and then OS X was starting to be incubated up, moved over to all the Apple hardware. But all the Apple hardware was getting renewed as well. So 45 computers at Apple were flushed, and 4 new computers were released slowly over time, right? 2 personal, mobile and desktop, and then 2 professional, mobile and desktop. By 2001, OS X hit the market, and it started having all this beautiful technology from Next. Next is amazing. That's what we're running right now, and we run OS X. It's the founding pieces of Next, right? And Next had something really, really cool, which was an amazing ability to index all the information on your hard drive. So you had tons of files on your hard drive. Not only would it index the file names, which is the only thing Windows did at the time, but index the content of the documents, which is actually very easy to do. Been doing a database for 25 years, right? But they create what's called a binary tree. And you don't really need to understand how this works, but they basically take everything that you could possibly search and they sort it alphabetically from like sort of like A to Z, and numbers are sorted as well. And the cool thing about a binary tree is that regardless of how much information you have on a drive, with today's processors and today's drives, you can find anything in a microsecond, just a few milliseconds, and you got it. So they can get in your computer, search on something extremely fast, and within seconds they can get a Boolean value back, 0 or 1, false or true. I found it, I didn't find it, right? Okay. Now all of a sudden, Apple starts doing really, really well. And they had this little thing called the iPod, which just happened to be this beautiful, beautiful mistake that blew the doors off of everything and enabled Apple to grow even further, right? I mean, they went from barely making a few billion a year off their hardware software to making multiple billions off just this little tiny iPod. And I don't know if that was just completely serendipitous. I tend to think it was. But then you start to have this operating system just soar past the competition. And then you start seeing Microsoft's operating system starting to languish, right? They then immediately tried to upgrade their search utility to do the same thing that Spotlight did, which is, again, the contents of the document and the names of the documents. And it still ran really, really bad. I think with Windows 7, we finally got a decent version of this thing, right? All of this is to harvest the data on your local computer such that it can be found very, very easily. So, if they suspect something on you, obviously it's going to be a pretty easy grab because you're connected to the internet. It's not going to be hard to walk through your computer no matter what router you have on your end and what operating system that you carry, right? But at the same time this is occurring, we have something called Google. And Google is a very interesting company, and I don't know if the true backstory on this will ever be revealed. But Google took the template of Yahoo, which is two guys, you know, from Stanford, using search algorithm technology and making this thing called Yahoo, which was phenomenal, still is, but they had the same exact story with two other guys making Google. Now, when I worked in the pharmaceutical industry, I was very close to Palo Alto. I was in Palo Alto, and we were right next door. Our campus was right up against Google's campus, which they were leasing some buildings out of Stanford. So Stanford was the neighboring campus. And I was running the beta of Google back in 94, right? Well, it changed the paradigm of everything because they saw way ahead of time this cloud technology. You know, it's actually old mainframe thinking. It's just taking the central server and putting it into a remote location, not inside your corporation, but outside in some cloud somewhere, right? So instantaneously, the old dogs coming in going, hey, man, we could reinvent the mainframe. We're just going to make internet-only devices, right? It'll be a decade and a half or so before we really get them out there, but now we have internet notebooks, right? Android just announced a 100% Android internet telephone. It'll have, I think, very little storage on the unit at all. All you'll do is be bringing it down. With 4G connections, you can bring down a song in 2 seconds, right? We stream video all the time, just like this one, right? So there's been this war that you have been unaware of at the operating system level. And I think that it's pretty clear that Microsoft has been given its sunset clause. It's not anytime soon, and because it's still installed on, you know, hundreds of millions of computers, but I'm going to tell you right now that the future is all about Google and the Android operating system. And it's just going to take a long time to get all the software ported to the Android operating system such that you don't lose any work. When you switch over, it's going to be seamless. You're going to have Microsoft Office or some compatible piece of software. And you're going to have the Photoshop suite and everything that you use, right? But it's going to take about a decade or so more to pull this off and to get the hardware ready and the servers ready and all that kind of stuff. Ever since Steve Jobs has passed away, we now see a total lack of innovation at Apple, which might be a setup to get Apple purchased by Google. Not sure. But now let's talk about, because I'm going to loop back, all right, on the home computer, because I'm going to go deeper and deeper into the technology till we get to the hardware level of how this works. But now I'm going to take cell phones for a split second. Cell phones are the easiest spy device in the world for the surveillance companies because, one, they're an enigma, right? They're this little compressed, you know, wafer-thin object with, miniaturized circuitry. So you can't really look inside and mess with it too much. Hackers will get in and they'll throw away the operating system that's on there and they put their own sort of more encrypted operating system on there. But overall, almost everything that you type is intended to go over the internet, right? I'm chatting you. As soon as I say send, that goes over the internet. The only thing that's really proprietary to my phone would be me typing a passphrase on my phone to unlock a piece of application software, right? And then create perhaps some local storage documents. But since we don't really run our companies off telephones, besides interacting with cloud services, which then are repeated down to desktop services, all right, very little is actually on your phone that's not going to be transmitted over the internet. And once it gets transmitted, it gets decrypted and stolen instantaneously. Well, the other thing is that most of the transmissions that they want to eavesdrop are by nature and by design an internet transmitted packet of information. Your text messages, your cell phones, or sorry, your emails, your voicemails, okay, and all the little subsidiary cloud services out there that you might be running on your telephone. Okay. Just so happens these things have cameras on both sides. The power supplies, at least for Apple power supplies, are non-removable. And this is something that, again, Steve Jobs said, we're going to lock up the back of this thing so you can't open it and take the battery out, which is an absurd concept. It's so unbelievably absurd that your cell phone has a battery locked inside that you have to go pay $100 to Apple to have them pull the back off and swap out the battery. When the Android Galaxy line has proven that you can put a back on there that's removable, that looks beautiful and doesn't disturb the experience, right? But Apple was serving a different master when they made that decision because he wanted surveillance devices on constantly that you could never turn off. And even though you turn off your phone, they still have the ability to turn on the camera and turn on the microphone. Remember, when you lay a cell phone down, you always have a camera pointing up, no matter which way you do it, unless you put it inside some glovey object, right? But I would imagine that if you start blocking your data, you start increasing the suspicious behavior, quote-unquote, of people that could get a warrant to go in your house and look at your stuff when you're not there or something, right? Most of us carry our phones with us, thank God, but those are extreme circumstances. But they still exist, right? All right. Now let's talk about the network, because this is where it all collapses, right? This is where your privacy doesn't exist. And you might actually say in your brain, well, of course it doesn't exist. I assume that if I transmit it, it's no longer private. All right. I wouldn't give up so easily if you have that opinion, right? The internet is based on a bunch of hardware that is very similar and very primitive, okay? The only advancements that are in the hardware that run the internet are the horsepower to transmit data faster and faster and more efficiently, so less packets get lost as they transmit. Everyone's trying to conquer that problem, and I would say that right now in history, we've done a damn good job at it. You know that you've got a wire coming to your house, then goes out to a pole, that goes to some hub that the carrier that you're buying your service from connects to their bigger hubs, until it bounces into the internet, right? But there's things called routers. And routers are big pieces of machinery, depends on which one you're looking at. Usually rack-mounted like a musical instrument or an amplifier of some sort. But inside there is where all the data gets decrypted. All of it. Now there's two ways and two places that it can be decrypted. It can be decrypted right at the router by running software. So routers have CPUs in them. They're always processing and decoding and re-encoding data and passing it on. There's no limit to what that software can do with that hardware, right? So one of the things it does, natively speaking, is it grabs the packet of data, does something with it, and then retransmits the packet of data, either summing up packets or just passing them along as fast as it gets them. Okay. Well, the other thing it can do is it can save information of a certain species in a little buffer that then can be grabbed on a routine basis. So if someone's looking for something very specific, you know, the IT guys that are trying to make sure that your company is secure can run certain software inside routers and look for various behaviors like attacks from other companies other countries, other intelligence agencies. You know, these DOS attacks where they pound the router so much it overloads and then nothing transmits, right? And all the services go down. But one of the most powerful, simple tricks is to make sure that every piece of data that goes in is copied and sent off to another location, fully encrypted. So it goes in encrypted, gets retransmitted to encrypted, but it also goes to its destination. So everything that you transmit gets a copy. Well, now at that copy location, they can run supercomputers on your shit and decode it, right? Well, the United States of America, there are hidden laws about encryption. And to my knowledge, they have not been revoked by any stretch of the imagination. In the mid-90s, when encryption was starting to become mainstream, it only became mainstream for a split second, and then it was too complex for everyone to understand, and then it fell out of mainstream. But it was like this. They take a piece of information, and they encrypt it. You know how that works, right? The A becomes a different character, or a bunch of different characters, and then the B becomes something different, and then they run that code backwards, just like the Enigma box that the Nazis created, right? Okay. We use gigantic prime numbers to create gigantic salty keys, which just means very random, to encrypt data. They're usually created at our local computer level when you see your browser lock, right? There's an encryption mechanism going on to lock everything going out of your browser and everything coming to your browser. So you kind of have a little private connection between you and the service that you're doing. And for the most part, 99.9% of the time, it is fully encrypted away from anyone that's going to do anything with your data besides a giant intelligence company, which could be United States of America, good guys, not going to do anything with your data, or a foreign body that can do stuff with your data, right? Well, they can crack anything almost instantaneously at the supercomputer level, but they ensure that they can crack it by one little law, which says that it was 96, it was a 4K key. It was a 4,096-bit prime number was the maximum you could encrypt something by before you had to give the government, the intelligence agencies, half of your key, which allows them to always decrypt your key. Once you go over a certain level, there's like, hey, we don't want to spend 100 years figuring out what somebody said. So we need to crack it instantaneously. And if our supercomputers can't crack your key by just sheer brute force instantaneously, right, then you're going to have to give us your private key. And these are broken into two pieces, right? One's a private key and one's a public key. And you don't hear about this, but this is the way stuff works underneath the hood, right? You give away your public key. And you encrypt it with your private key. And now when you send it to the side, they can piece it together and decrypt it back out. That's a real primitive explanation, but just trust me, that's how it works. So the government demands that you give away the private key to them so they can always decrypt everything if you go over a certain bit rate. Now, that because things have gotten more powerful, they probably have lifted the limit a little bit. But I remember when I was writing a piece of software that was going to store all of your keys on your local computer, away from everyone else, with one big public-private key to get in there, and then all of the other ones were stuck inside, right? We had a limit. And the guys that were mentoring me just secured NORAD, all right? Which, consequently, was very insecure and had a lot of Macintosh computers. My whole career, I've helped... sorry, I shouldn't say that. At times in my career, I've helped folks like Los Alamos Labs create systems, and they were so double-backed, double-blinded that they couldn't tell me what the system did, but they would say, okay, well, what if I was doing an apple and an orange this way, and I would help them write the software for it on their end, right? But they ran Macintosh computers exclusively, and I asked them once, I said, well, I think it's great, I'm running a Mac here. Why are you guys running a Mac in the middle of a Windows era, you know, where the masses are running Windows? And they said, because we don't want to be hacked. Kind of cool, right? Still that way to this day. I have had one virus on a Macintosh computer. It was 1998, and it was the Envire A virus, which just sat there and chewed up memory. That's all it did. It just kept adding a bunch of numbers in memory slowly until your whole computer ran out of memory. And the company I worked for actually accidentally distributed it on a master disk. But that's the last time I saw one. I've never seen one since. So people want to say, oh, there's viruses on Macs too. It's like, oh yeah, well, I'm a tech guy and I've never seen one, you know. I catch PC ones on my computer and they're eradicated, but they don't run. They don't do anything, right? So routers are the thing that Snowden's not telling you. Routers are where everything is either copied and stolen, or in very rare cases, decrypted in the router itself. Now, there's a very, very famous router company that just did a deal with one of those OS companies as of today, September 1st, 2015. It was announced today. They're going to do this little partnership. And I'll not mention them by name, so I don't get in trouble and get this video pulled, but that's a suspicious company if there ever was one. At the time that company came around, this router company, it came out of San Francisco. They had massive competition. The whole industry was owned by all the competition. Nortel and Fujitsu and a bunch of other folks completely owned everything and made it great. And this company exploded on the industry. And all these CIOs, all these chief information officers canceled a ton of orders with all those competitors and started using this one. And you could say it was an American-made product, supposedly, so that's why they switched over. I'm going to say that was a built from the ground up company that was in cahoots with the surveillance that was being prepared for the future. Just my suspicion, because of the competitive the lack of competitiveness that existed and their superiority in the market almost instantaneously, right? All right. So we've got the personal computer is indexing all of your information to be harvested, right? And it's not being given away by the operating system company. It's being prepared by the operating system company so that if they want to look in your computer, they get the data. Your cell phone has absolutely no security whatsoever because you transmit 90% of your information over the internet as the sheer matter of design of a cell phone. It bounces off those routers. So your desktop and your cell phone transmits most of your stuff over the internet. If you use Dropbox or any of these cloud services, it doesn't have to be that service that's helping anyone spy. It's just that they're luring you to put your stuff over the internet. Once it transmits over the internet, it's not encrypted before it goes in most cases, and it gets saved on the other end, safe and sound, right? And again, most of us, we have nothing to hide. You could look at my computers right now in my house, and there's not a single thing that's secret in my home at all. Not a bit, right? Maybe some embarrassing messages, but that's about it. All right. So let's go a little deeper because this is not really paranoia. It's paranoia. It's just facts about hardware. Let's say that you say, well, I protect everything on my computer with a password. Now, I just said they can walk right in your operating system. I think most of you know that that's the case. But let's just say, and we're going to get to fingerprinting here in a second on cell phones, but let's just say you're typing into a keyboard. How many of you have started up your computer from being asleep and you're looking at your password field and you jam it real fast? Boom, that little muscle memory thing, you jam it real fast. And eventually, it doesn't show up on the inside the password field until a few seconds later, and then it goes, and it's there. All right. You have seen the mechanism that they can use against you if they needed your stuff, right? If they wanted your password, they just want to walk straight in, right? There's little chips inside every piece of hardware that takes input, and it's a buffer. And these things were created for convenience. They weren't created for surveillance by any stretch because they realized that if you did invest in typing your password, they didn't want to make you lose that investment such that it wouldn't show up in the password field when it was ready. So this is allowing them to buffer it into the keyboard, non-encrypted, and shove it into the CPU whenever the CPU is ready to take the buffer out of the keyboard and shove it into the field, whatever operating system is or wherever applications got the attention of the operating system. You know how it works, right? But for those few minutes, or few seconds, I should say, that your keystrokes are inside the keyboard, it's completely harvestable by other software on the computer. Again, what happens at the router side, where it either takes a copy or and then transmits it, can happen at the hardware level. So here comes the anything from the keyboard, and it can be sidetracked over to some other location if there's some little piece of keyboard watching software. Now, Apple's done a pretty good job getting rid of keyboard monitors. They've actually protected any event listener, software event listener in the operating system from stealing keystrokes. So there, 10 years ago, you could watch everyone's keystrokes on a computer on a Mac, and now you can't, as far as I know, without some low-level stuff that's really hacking the operating system and probably putting your computer in jeopardy of running badly after that. Windows, not so much. Cell phones, definitely not. Very easy to monitor keystrokes in a cell phone. Same exact thing. Now, a cell phone's a little bit different because it's not, it's never just a hardware system except the new fingerprint readers, because it's a soft keyboard in most cases, right? Now, BlackBerry still has a hardware keyboard on some of them because some people have big fingers and they can rarely use an electronic soft keyboard unless they turn to landscape, right? So just be aware that hardware actually has buffers, little microcontrollers that hold characters, and they can be harvested if need be, okay? But now let's look at some of the applications that have been developed over the years. And Apple's at the absolute forefront of this harvesting technique. And I love Apple, you need to know. But I refuse to use iPhoto and iMovie because of one feature that they will not allow you to turn off. And this should give you an inkling as to the intent of this technique. You'll know that 10 years ago, probably in some change, that the idea of face recognition became something that was a feature that anyone gave a shit about. No one gives a shit about this feature, all right? I've not met a single soul who gives a shit whether or not the software that took the photographs out of your camera recognizes dad in the background, right? It's horrendously annoying when it sees random strangers and asks you to tag them, or a painting on the wall with a face, and or some little shadow that they think's a face, right? But when you import all your stuff into iPhoto, after they turn this feature on, you couldn't turn it off, and it took forever for it to look through your photos and look for faces, right? But that got all the binary tree data that used to have just file information, both contents and names, and it starts indexing the graphical association of faces in your software. So now when they want to look for somebody, whether they be good and they want to frame them, or they're bad and they want to catch them, they can beam a request out to every single computer with that operating system and ask it, do you have this face? And here's the dimensions. And all they're looking, and by the way, the request packets are so utterly tiny, you would never see them come over your wire, and it could be disguised very easily because the monitoring software that we run on our computers to see what's coming in and out, this request can go right underneath those event listeners, away from the software. The software never knows it's coming in. You're being spoofed and you don't know it. And all it needs back is a single bit, a zero or a one. I have some candidates. I don't have some candidates, right? Now, you might think, well, my photographs are 6 megs a piece, 10 megs a piece, because I run a real high-def HD camera. Well, I'm going to give you a little made-up scenario that I would do if I were them. Very simple. I ask your computer if it has this face. By the way, they mostly have GPS locations as well and timestamps, so I can find someone in the back of your Disneyland photographs that I'm looking for, right? I'm going to ask your computer if it has any candidates. If it comes back with a yes, then I'm going to say, why don't you give me low-res black and white versions of that image, just the grossest version of the photograph back, and we'll take a eyeball look at it and see, you know, with maybe human beings, if that's what we're looking for. And that's going to transmit out the back of your computer very small, 10-50K. Today, that blasts out of a modem, you wouldn't even notice it, right? If I think I really want your photographs because it really looks like our guy, maybe in the middle of the night, I'll ask your computer for the high-res ones, and you'll never know. But again, it can be transmitted on a protocol that wouldn't be monitored by any monitoring software. So your computer's reading from the hard drive, transmitting out the Ethernet card or the wireless router, and none of it's being monitored or allowed to be monitored by the operating system, which is in cahoots with these individuals that take your data, right? Now, I hope that everything I'm saying about the local computer is just immediately transferred to the cell phone, right? I have no idea if it goes on your charges, right? Now, Apple came out with iMovie. Now, iMovie was really, really cool when it first came out and super simple to use. And then it got upgraded to this very different interface. And a lot of people that liked the previous iMovie got out really quick because they were like, this is just too complicated. And then they moved that exact kernel into Final Cut, which is what I use to prepare these videos. But iMovie and Final Cut have a feature, but in Final Cut you can turn it off because professionals were like, you're crazy. And it was this. Imagine you have a camera that takes 30 frames a second, or if you buy a big fancy camera, 60 frames a second, and you import it into iMovie. iMovie scrapes every single frame for face recognition, and at least last time I downloaded it, you couldn't turn it off. So you import your movie, which takes a long time off the card. These movies are, they take probably a good 15, 20 minutes just to get off the little RAM disk inside there, right? But now they've harvested all of your lowbrow, non-professional consumer videos, right? So that's most of the videos in the world go through this iMovie thing. And you have to sit for hours and hours and hours while it prepares your video, right? Scraping all the intelligence data out of every frame. Getting it in a binary tree that's lookupable, right? Searchable. And it can be searched instantaneously with those other techniques I told you, right? So that's how intense it can be. And there are techniques of talking to your computer that have been theorized on paper by other scientists, not me, that are fascinating, which is that you could talk to a computer through the power supply, through the actual power supply. They can actually hit the grid in your house and send a certain pulse that could wake up a certain routine in your computer. They could walk in your computer through literally the power supply in your computer, not your Ethernet cable, but it performs just like a network. And this was completely thought up and it's actually said to be used in various sting operations of intelligence agencies. So I have to say that it sounds completely plausible to me. You know, it's just binary data, in and out, on and offs, right? Which wake up certain protocols and make them do things, right? Because chips are so miniaturized and so tiny, and the software that's doing most of this stuff is actually in those chips, right? Not the operating system. All your search tables and stuff are created through operating systems that you can monitor and see. But any of this backdoor stuff, imagine they just use a certain brand of transistor, a certain little extra chip that they say, oh, it's a little sound processing chip. And maybe it does process sound, but half the chip has got this other stuff on it, right? As long as we, the people, don't demand that everything be exposed and testable, where we can say, we're going to completely interrogate this chip and say, what's on it? We're going to pull out every piece of software on it. We're going to look at its schematic of how the microchip's actually laid out and make sure that these transistors are being used for what it's the software in it's supposed to be doing. We're not going to be safe. And some of you might say, well, there's there are black telephones that are coming out now, right? These black box telephones, which are supposed to be super duper secure. They cost extra hundreds of dollars, if not thousands of dollars. They might be onto something, but again, there's a couple things. If they don't encrypt at the microcontroller level, the keyboard level of any device, they're not truly protecting you. And if the data is transmitted ever in a non-encrypted manner, and with keys that are way beyond the limitations of the surveillance organizations that say you can have keys stronger than we can break, then you're still not secure. You're basically paying for a placebo effect that isn't real, right? So keep that in mind as you spend a lot of money to secure yourself, right? Again, I'm not trying to help terrorists or anything like that, but again, I think, as I said at the beginning of this video, anybody who has nefarious deeds planned, they're not going to be using these techniques at all, right? And I personally think that we're pretty safe in the world. That doesn't mean bad things won't happen, but you always have to look at who would benefit from those bad things, and they're usually not the people that are being accused of it, right? So the main thrust of this episode is to make sure that you understand how unbelievably detailed it is, okay? We're going to get into the fingerprint thing in a second here, but that these companies do say that true statements when they talk about how they do not cooperate to give away your information. But what they're not telling you is how they prepare it for harvesting, right? Now, there's two things I want to talk about before I finish up. One is the fingerprint readers, which are now starting to become all this cashless society bullshit, right? I mean, credit cards have gotten to the point you swipe them and you don't have to sign, you know, so we need to be more cashless than that. It's absurd, right? Pulling out your phone, unlocking it, and then putting your biometric information in it to pay for something. You think that's easier than swiping a piece of plastic, which is the most analog digital thing in the world, right? All right. So there was a big deal when Apple introduced, again, Apple, you know, Jobs, Next, CIA, rebirth of Apple, and all of a sudden Apple has all this amazing technology, including almost spy-level cameras that are put inside their optics and their phones, right? But you put your finger on this bad boy, and it scans your finger, right? All those companies come from the intelligence agencies having secured their services first, and now it's being pushed into the mass products, right? Well, the big deal was, could someone steal the fingerprint out of these phones and then use it to purchase all kinds of stuff on your behalf, or just have your biometric data for some other sort of event, right? Well, Apple said, no, we've got special processors in the phone, and it, you know, we never give your information out of the phone, right? We just have it in this local chip on your phone. Well, a group in Germany within 2 weeks backdoored into the phone with standard security flaws that are built into the operating system, the iOS, and they stole the fingerprint, no problem. The fingerprint mechanism in cell phones is harvesting. It is the most basic data harvesting thing you've ever seen in your life, right? Takes it off your finger, puts it in a local chip, ready to be stolen through back doors. And of course, they'll patch a back door and open a back door, right? Even Apache servers, which have been running for 20 years plus, in one fashion or another, have back doors that are constantly open, right? And if you run a web service of any kind, you'll constantly get these emails once every 5 years. Oh, we've been stealing your data forever. You know, one of those kind of things, right? Oh, well, then I'll patch up my operating system. And then 5 years later, something else grabbed you. So just know that your biometric information is not safe either, right? So if you have one of these, you can make a very conscious choice. I don't want to use this service. I do want to use this service. But here's the big question, which I don't have the answer for. Even if you turn off the biometric system, does it actually turn it off from harvesting it into the phone, just not using it, right? Again, I'm not quite sure how that information could be used against you, but who knows, right? If we have a big mass murder and when the only thing we have for evidence is a thumbprint, maybe we could do some basic correlations there and say, oh, I got it off a cell phone. I doubt that would ever happen. But anyway, the other big one that happens all the time, and you see it all the time and you blow it off, is that giant corporations lose hundreds of thousands, if not millions of accounts out of their database, and nothing nefarious happens with that data. Apple just had to announce that through a single cell phone, 260,000 accounts were hacked, meaning the password and login information was all hacked, which then you would think, well, they could buy a bunch of music or software or whatever with that account. Credit card companies, all of them, lose all the data in an interval. It's interesting. Visa, MasterCard will be hacked once every 5 years, and all the data is stolen, right? And it's stolen in an encrypted form, and the press says there's no, shouldn't be at risk, yada, yada, and nothing ever happens, right? I've never had my credit card used by one of those hacks. You know, I luckily have not been messed with on that level, but I have friends of mine that have had, you know, identity theft 100 times, right? And I think when it comes to identity theft and someone in Florida buy a bunch of Louis Vuitton bags, that's a true low-level hacker just stealing your information and using one of the back doors to get their way. Okay. But I'm going to put in your brain the following. When you hear about massive corporations losing millions of accounts and nothing happens as a result of that purge of data, that is your NSA going in and routinely taking the data out of those corporations and not doing anything with it, because they're probably good guys just looking at the information. They have been charged with getting that data from those sources, and the sources know that the data is being stolen by generally a good force. And so it gets in the press because of liability, right? Or someone in the company needs to say, hey man, I came to work that day and it was all stolen and we ran around like chickens, you know, like chickens with their heads cut off. So it makes it to the press, but nothing ever happens. And I'm going to say that that's our intelligence agency going in and stealing the information as a part of this Military Commissions Act and this lack of Fourth Amendment, right? The other one is your traffic on the internet. The traffic on the internet builds a profile against you or for you, right? If you talk to ex-police officers, they say, you know, when they give you that warning that anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law, it's not a if, that's can and will be used against you. It's never says, well, can and will be used to defend you, right? So most of the sheriffs say, depending on what you're involved in, if you're in a situation where you didn't do anything wrong, but something really negative happened, you're at a nightclub and someone fires a gun and you just happen to be, you know, piled into the van because you were too close to these guys, keep your mouth shut because you didn't do anything. And if you say something, you might give them a mechanism to make you guilty by association. So same thing goes for your web traffic, right? So now web traffic, let's look at this. They've even used it against Hillary Clinton. You know, Hillary Clinton, who's now an unconvicted felon for holding top secret emails in a private server, right? She could be selling those secrets to a foreign country for money. That's what that allowed her to do. She probably didn't do that, but she could. She could be a shill from the European banking cartel to say this is what people are doing. Now, sure, decent emails are coming in as well, so she's saving just basic conversations with other politicians. They're saying, this guy's an asshole. We don't want to have him be elected. But the secret stuff is the stuff that'll never be published, right? And again, these servers have been under suspicion for 2 years before they've been released. So they've had 2 years to get the information, look at it, sanitize it, so whatever comes out in the press doesn't affect her presidential election. But, you know, she searched on software that said, how do you erase emails off a server? At least that's what the normal press said, okay? So every time you go into a web browser, what does it do? You go to the very tippy top. There's two types of searches that happen, right? Some people go to Google and they load Google up, and that's just the default page on the web browser. And then even if they want to go to foxnews.com or cnn.com, they type it into Google, make Google search on it first, and they take the first match, which is the exact website they want to go to, and they think that that's totally cool. They just gave away their traffic to a private for-profit company, which seems to exude a lot of the directives of being evil and being government surveillance, right? But let's say you think you're smart and you go to the top of the browser and you're going to type in your favorite website. On almost every device on the planet, it goes to Google. And what happens? Google starts pre-looking up, you know, what you might be looking for. And Google's amazing. I mean, without Google, it would be a lot harder for me to do my job. Anything technical, anything I want to look up, reference, it's amazing. You just ask the sentence. What I think is funny is people call me up and say, dude, how do I do this on my computer? And I said, why don't you just type the question into Google? Because the first answer is probably the one you're looking for right on there. Or type it into YouTube, which is another Google product that will give you a video of whatever the hell you're looking for. Don't ask me, right? I'm going to give you my last impression of what's new, and they're going to give you the ripest answer in the world. So everything you type into your computer and a web browser goes out to Google first and then bounces to wherever you think you're going. And once it bounces to Google, especially unencrypted, it's never going to be encrypted. Why would it be encrypted, right? It gets locked up in an NSA database, and then they can do with it whatever they want, right? Now, the other thing I want to tell people that aren't technical is that a lot of the evidence that's put on people is very easily fabricated. So we had a guy recently go up and shoot a reporter, supposedly, right? He emptied 3 rounds in her gut and she didn't flinch, didn't fall on the ground. She was able to actually mechanically run away, which is phenomenal. And it was a white guy's hand for a black guy who supposedly did the crime, right? When you look at his GoPro footage, he's like, he's invisible, right? Pulls a gun, puts it back away, pulls a gun again. No one notices this big, formidable guy walking up with a gun, right? We'll just leave that for another episode. We'll leave that for MKUltra Radio, the normal episodes. Now, we know there's social media today, and a lot of the evidence that comes out against these killers is all about their social media posts, about how they just premeditated up the murder, had issues and that sort of thing. Now, we know that you can post on someone else's page from any location in the world. All you need is the credentials to log in and type whatever will fit the story. So anytime someone uses Twitter, someone anytime uses Facebook, any one of those mechanisms, and you start seeing all this backstory start coming out about the guy, well, gosh, you should have seen what he wrote on Twitter. He said, you know, she called him a monkey and da-da-da-da-da. That can all be inserted. All the text messages can be transmitted on that guy's behalf. One of the interesting things is that if you were to be accused of sending an email that you didn't send, emails are just text files on servers. And you can just create a text file and drop it into the email bin of anyone's email account anywhere on the planet, especially, you know, if you have intelligence privileges, you can put it in someone's account and it just looks like they sent the email. And it's admissible in court as evidenced against you, even though it's a technically manufactured thing, including all the creation dates, the IDs that are created in the header, which you never see. All that stuff can be created out of thin air and put up against you. So the thing is, if all of our data is always harvested and they need a patsy, they can create the patsy and then they can just flood all of your social media interaction with whatever will fit the story. But you're dead and you can't defend yourself. Okay? And that is why being secure in a virtual world is actually extremely important. And the more you engage in social media, the more you put yourself at risk of these arteries, right? And I think it's safe to say almost everyone is at risk. But manifestos and all this other stuff, they're like Word documents on a hard drive, right? So you prepare all this stuff, just like Lee Harvey Oswald supposedly wrote a diary in a continuous handwriting and a continuous pen, you know, from start to finish, all pages seem like he wrote it on one day. You know, that's old-fashioned technique of inserting data on someone who's a patsy. And again, what I'm talking about is an extreme scenario, but that's why laws exist to make freedoms, right? When they founded the United States of America, for instance, they made these 10 Bill of Rights that were specifically designed to combat the tyranny that they had experienced in Europe. And all we're allowing it to happen right now is the undoing through fear, right? Through things we can't confirm, right? Well, this guy did this thing over in the Middle East. Right now, ISIS supposedly tore down a temple. Makes us hate them even more, right? How many of you have gone there and taken a look at it, right? You know, the interesting thing, just as a slight digression before I close off, is that they supposedly knew that they were tearing up this temple for a couple days. You can't just tear up a temple in one day, right? Well, then you know exactly where they are. Why aren't our Delta Force guys, Rangers, Special Forces dropping in, surrounding that place and wiping those guys out? Because it's all set up. It's all set up to make you fear and hate them, right? Fear and loathe, right? So that's where we're going to wrap it up. This has just been sort of a mini tutorial as to how exposed you really are day to day. And the more that we adopt these cloud services and give up our sovereignty, we call it a hard drive, the more that we transmit stuff insecure or allow our intelligence agencies to always have the keys to decrypt what we have, we put ourselves at risk, not by the intelligence people themselves, but people that actually have access to the same tools, right? We talked about drones on the show. Well, a drone flown by a good guy is not going to have any moral problems that we need to worry about, right? But the second they transfer an American drone with missile-tipped, you know, wings on it, and they transfer the controls to another country, which is an ally that has no loyalty to an American really in their soul, and you say, well, this American over there is a bad guy. Well, the guy seeing another country, he's like, well, I'm getting rid of an American traitor or whatever. Fire, boom, dead. And nobody in America went to bed with any type of a moral dilemma, right? And the same thing goes for surveillance. So if you're concerned, now you know. If you're technically wanting to protect yourself, now you know what extent you need to go to, right? Probably turning your house into a fully analog house if you really wanted to be secure. And you just as a matter of principle, you're not a bad guy. But just know that by turning off your house, right? If they can't get data into your home and you don't have a cell phone, everything seems to be protected all of a sudden, they can construe that against you as a suspicious activity. But you're not guilty of anything but monitoring your freedoms. So doing this on an individual level is probably fruitless. But if we as a society ever get an opportunity to address these issues because there's some sort of cultural mental revolution in the world, right? And these issues go back up on the table and it's like, okay, what do we do with all this surveillance that's here? These are the things you need to talk about. Turn stuff off in software, make sure things are secure, both at the microcontroller keyboard level and every single bit that goes up. You know, we need to make encryption keys so massively large that with the current supercomputers times 100, it still takes them 1,000 years to figure out what you said. Why not, right? It's better than the lock on your diary. Okay. Anyway, if you made this far, thanks for listening. As always, go to MKUltraRadio.com. Everything is there. I won't beat you up with it. If you haven't subscribed, subscribe. If you like it, like it. That's it. And be safe and be protected. Over and out. My motto, cool, being cool, keep camping. Don't sleep, we roll deep in a Lincoln. Four votes on 100 spokes.